Dharam a paramore. Yat as it is, as it is right. Apatrapa without shame. Kulam the dynasty. Pituhu of your father. Cha and Bartuhu of your husband. Cha and Nayasi you are bringing down. Adatama downward into darkness or hell. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. O my daughter, who were born in a respectable family, how have you degraded your consciousness in this way? How it is that you are shamelessly maintaining a paramour? You will thus degrade the dynasties of both your father and your husband to hellish life. Purport. It is quite clear that according to the Vedic culture, a woman who accepts a paramour or second husband in the presence of the husband she has married is certainly responsible for the degradation of her father's family and the family of her husband. The rules of Vedic culture in this regard are strictly observed in the respectable families of Brahmanas, Kshatriyas and Vaishyas even today. Only the Shudras are degraded in this matter. For a woman of the Brahmana, Kshatriya or Vaishya class to accept another husband in the presence of the husband she has married, or to file for divorce or accept a boyfriend or a paramour is unacceptable in a Vedic culture. Therefore, King Sariyati, who did not know the real facts of Chyavana Muni's transformation, was surprised to see the behavior of his daughter. Prabhupada ki jai. Esya prasada rajyopi sadya sarvagya tangaje sashi chaitanya devame bhagavan samprasidatu vande shri krishna chaitanya nityananda sahodita gaudhodaye pushpavanta chitra sandhauta maunita govindo valake rathe prathaye tvamaham sada tvadiyam chijanatu govindo mantvaya saham. Hare Krishna. So this year we're going to celebrate the 45th anniversary when Srila Prabhupada came to the land of America. So 45 years ago Srila Prabhupada came with the message of the Vedic culture to the Western world. He brought this tender seed to put down in a Vedic culture to grow in the Western world. Although the Western world wasn't ready for that kind of culture, because you know at that time when Srila Prabhupada came, the youth of America was worshipping the rock stars, even they worshipping right now, even rock stars or drug dealers at that time, many of them was experimenting with narcotics and everything. But Srila Prabhupada came with the hope that these people will listen his message. This very nice Vedic culture. So, reading these verses and reading this Srimad Bhagavatam, these verses and other verses, we have to try to appreciate what Srila Prabhupada gave us. He gave us this very wonderful culture, Vedic culture. Just like, actually, in the Western, that Western world, there was no culture at all. I remember somebody, one journalist asked, many years ago, asked Jawaharlal Nehru, or maybe Mahatma Gandhi, I can't remember who of them. They asked, the journalist asked this person, what do you think about Western culture? And his answer was, it will be good idea, meaning that there is no culture at all, but it will be good idea to create some culture in the Western world. So, there was no culture. Talking about this verse, that actually at that time, at the Vedic time, the woman wasn't acceptable to file for divorce or have a paramour. I wanted to highlight the one line in the purport of Srila Prabhupada. The rules of Vedic culture in this regard are strictly observed in the respectable families of Brahmanas, Kshatriyas and Vaishyas even today. Only the Shudras are degraded in, in this matter. So, Kalau Shudra Sambhava, we know that. That there is no actually culture, everybody very degraded. Because, you know, so, Srila Prabhupada said that actually at that time when he was young, Srila Prabhupada said that even we are had the same desire, for example, to talk to the women and have a start dating with the women. But he said that our culture was so strong that we afraid was even think about that. But even though in the heart, in the mind, we have the same desire to flirt with women and do everything the same, but the culture is so strong that you can't come to the women and start chatting with them, talking to them, laughing and everything like that. So we can see the difference between that two cultures. I remember that a few years ago on a seminar, Shachinand Maharaj gave, in very detail how in Vedic time, how the marriage was arranged. And Shachinand Maharaj, he gave very detailed information how they do that. I can't remember everything, but I can tell you that, for example, first of all, the parents had one family has a boy, another family has a girl. And if the parents come together and start discussing about this, and they start making the horoscope for them, and if the horoscope is compatible, so they decide to make a contact between the children. So he explained that so parents of the girl gave cooked some sandesh and tell them and give sandesh to this girl and told to her daughter, their daughter, go to this boy and give him this sandesh. So she went and give this sandesh. So day by day, she's bringing something to this boy. And after some time, there is a relationship started, some relationship. And boy reciprocation was that he's protecting this little girl because the girl always pulled by here by other boys or something like that. So this boy, because he already attached a little bit, because she's serving from very beginning, from 5 years old, this girl serving this boy, she doesn't understand what she's doing, but parents give her sandesh or apple, give this to this boy. So she doesn't understand, but at the age of 13 or 12, she starts to understand, and her senses wake up. So this is Vedic culture, very smart culture. Actually, Vedic culture is teaches Vedic culture teaches us knowledge and teaches us detachment in this world. Because even though, you know, you could see that Sukanya, she was, as we know from this chapter, that Sukanya, she didn't refuse her husband when the two Ashwini Kumaras came to her. In Mahabharata, there is more detailed information about this story and about the life of Chyavana Muni. And if you want, I can tell you in a little bit more details, very interesting in details. and a little bit continuation of that story, what happened. And one of the episodes from Chaitanya Muni's life. So, as we know, so Chaitanya Muni was meditating in an ant's hill, and Sukanya, his eyes pulled up, poked her his eyes. So, after some time, so she married him, and. She married him, but even though she was old and very bad, but I mean old and bad character and everything, even though he had this bad character, still Sukanya was very chaste to him. And there was the Mahabharata brings this story about this incident, that when one day the Sukanya taking shower in the lake. And at that time, the two Ashwini Kumaras were at the same time, but they was invisible to her. But these two Ashwini Kumaras were so enchanted with her beauty, and she was so beautiful that they decided to make their appearance before her. So they appeared before her and tell her, you know, we are great demigods. And we want to marry you because we are very much attracted to your beauty. And she said, I'm sorry, my dear demigods, but I can't accept you because I already have a husband, even though he was old. But they already knew about this old husband, and they was very much impressed by her chastity, and they said, okay, you're a very chaste woman, so for that we want to offer you some blessings. You can choose any blessings you want. If you want, we can make your husband very young and beautiful like we are. And she said, okay, this is a good idea. If you want, you can do that. They said, with one condition. We make him the same as we are, non-different from us, and you have to choose from three of us who is your husband. If you choose wrong, you have to marry this person. So this was a test for her. So she went to her husband Chaitanya Muni to take advice. And Chaitanya Muni said, well, let's try, because it's a good opportunity for me to become young. Let's try. At least 33% is for me. So she agreed. So they went, as we know from Srimad Bhagavatam, they went to that lake and appeared three of them, non-different, the same, all the same, three of them. And she started praying. Oh, my dear Ashwini Kumaras, my dear Lord, please let me stay chaste for the rest of my life, because, you know, she starts praying. And Krishna or somebody as Paramatma in her heart reveal her, they give her understanding. She saw that two person is hovering above the earth, little bit hovering, two of them, and one stays on the ground. So she understood that this is her husband, and she put garland on him, and she chose that person, Chaitanya Muni. And after she made this choice, so Chaitanya Muni was very much satisfied with that, and he said, okay, I'm also has some power, so I can give you some blessings to the Ashwini Kumaras. I can give you some blessings. What do you want? And the Ashwini Kumaras, they knew about the power of the Chaitanya Muni. Because, you know, Chaitanya Muni, when the story also brings in Mahabharata that Chaitanya Muni also was very powerful sage. He was a son of Bhrigu. At the time when he was born, actually when Bhrigu, he was with his wife in his bhajan kutir, and he need to go out to take shower or something, I don't know, he went somewhere, and he asked Agni to protect his wife, because she was pregnant at that time. So he asked Agni to protect while he was out. So he went out, and one demon who was very much attracted to the Chavana Muni's mother before her marriage. So as soon as Bhrigu Muni left, he cheated the Agni, and he took the wife from the hermitage and took her away. He put her on a pig and went away. So at that time she was pregnant, but at that time when he was stolen her, this mother of Chavana Muni gave birth to the Chavana Muni. And so Chavana Muni means fell out from the womb. This means Chavana. It's a strange name for the sage, but it's the name. He fell out, dropped. But he was so powerful even in the womb of her mother that he was shining. Chavana Muni was shining. This was early in the morning, and he was dissipating the darkness. He was so shining. And the demon, he was so afraid of the, because he saw the power of the Chavana Muni, and he left this wife and left this woman with her baby and gone, went away. He afraid to steal. So when I finished, so Chavana Muni gave the benediction to give benediction to Ashwini Kumaras. So Ashwini Kumaras said, you know, it's unfair in a heavenly kingdom. You know, Indra don't give us Somarasa, because we are the doctors of the demigods, and we considered Shudras in a society in a heaven society, and Indra doesn't give us nectar Somarasa. So and Chavana Muni said, Tadas too, let it be so. So immediately he started the yagya, Soma yagya, and he started Soma yagya, and he invited all the demigods and everybody to this arena of the sacrifice. And first, when after some time, when the Soma appeared on the sacrifice, so he took this pot with the Soma, and first he went to Ashwini Kumaras to give them their share of the nectar. And at that time, Indra was very fearful, very angry about that, because he thought, who's that, these two guys, they're thinking that they are more powerful than me, than Indra. And I want to mention one more thing about Chavana Muni. Chavana Muni, he was so powerful that by his power, by his, if he wants, if he look at somebody and this person stun immediately, unmoving, stunned, yeah, he can't move anything if he wants. So at that time when Indra, he already started to with the desire to kill this Ashwini Kumaras, and he took his vajra and prepared to kill, at that time Chavana Muni just looked at him and he stunned like this. So, and after some time, Chavana Muni looked at the sacrificial fire, and from this fire, the great ferocious demon came out, called Mada. And this Mada demon, with intention to kill Indra and everybody who was on the sacrifice, rushed over them. And the demigods who was there, they were so afraid, they just scattered all around, disappeared. But Indra can't, he was very, very afraid. He can't move anything, no, he can't move leg, no, his finger even. But at least he could move his tongue. And he started praying to the Chavana Muni, please save me. I don't want to kill anybody, please. I give you, just forgive me. He wanted to kill Chavana Muni and Ashwini Kumaras. just forgive me. He just praying for forgiveness. And Chavana Muni said, okay. So he said, because he already created this demon, he can't take it back, this demon mother. So he started thinking, what should I do now with this demon? Because he has a purpose to kill somebody now. We have to do something with this demon. So he said to Indra, Indra, please kill this demon. And I mean, sever this demon for four parts with your vajra. So he did that, and these four parts divided in such a way he killed this demon. But he later started thinking what to do with this part, and because this four parts was parts of the demon Mada, so Chavana Muni decided to. You know why we are following the four regulative principles? Because of Chavana Muni's blessings. I mean, not the blessings, but because he put this mada, madness, into these four principles. And those people who didn't, who don't follow the four regulative principles, they become mad. They will become more in anxiety. Even though we may think, well, so many people, they're not following the four regulative principles, why they're not mad? But actually, they have a subtle anxiety in their heart. They're always in anxiety. They're always perturbed by any kinds of distress. So these four parts of the mother went to the illicit sex, to the gambling, to the narcotics, and to the and the meat, right? So these four things. And later on, the Parikshit Maharaj also declared that this also the age of Kali, or his quality of the quarrel and hypocrisy, will also enter in this same four defects, for things. So it means those who not following this one or other principles, the mada, the hypocrisy, and the enmity will enter in their heart. So by the blessings of the Chavana Muni, we are following this four regulative principles. So now we will say more about the Vedic culture. Actually, the Vedic culture is good, but it has to be both. You know, the Vedic culture can't go alone, because Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur wanted to create Daivi Varnashrama, not just Varnashrama, but Daivi Varnashrama. Because Daivi Varnashrama, if just Varnashrama, people will just be engaged in their rituals, and they might forget about the goal of life. But the Vaishnava culture, what is the purpose or meaning of Vaishnava culture? Purpose of Vaishnava culture is obtain love of Godhead. So this is the main purpose. But if it should go together with the Vedic culture. If we try to put this, if we try to propagate Vedic culture in the Western world right now, so people might think that this is not very productive, not very practical, because, you know, we are not Brahmanas, we are not Kshatriyas, we don't have any inclination, we just work on our job and that's it. So the Vedic culture should be together with the Vaishnava culture. Because, you know, right now is if we I forgot one thing. Okay. So Vedic culture is a good, because Vedic culture teaches us how to bring respect first of all, respect to others. Srila Prabhupada, he is citing Madhvacharya. Madhvacharya is saying that The Vedic culture is good because Vedic culture teaches us in everybody, in everything, see God. For example, children, they see parents as God, they worship them as God. Disciples see spiritual master as God. So the servant sees the master as God in the Vedic culture. And Madhvacharya said that by seeing everybody around us as God and developing respect to others, ultimately we will see God and we will know how to properly behave with God. So because right now if we just die and go if we want to go to spiritual world, what are we going to do there? We didn't respect anybody in this world, so what are we going to do in the spiritual world? We just do the same. Just spit on everybody's face. So this is the Vedic culture teaches us how to be in harmony with the environment around us. This is Vedic culture. And plus Vaishnava culture teaches us how to obtain love of God, which Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu inaugurated in 500 years ago on our planet. Actually the Vedic culture is teaches us detachment, I already told that. And there is one very interesting story about maybe somebody heard about Vairagya Shatakam, written by Maharaj Bhartrihari. It's a very nice and instructive story about this Maharaja. He was known as a Sanskrit grammar. This Raja was a compiler of the Sanskrit grammar, Maharaj Bhartrihari. So I want to narrate this wonderful story, how the Vedic culture creates proper understanding to this life and to this world. So this Maharaj Bhartrihari, he was a very, very, very successful king, and he had a very nice citizens who loved him very much. And he had a very nice and chaste wife, very beautiful wife, and he was extremely happy in his kingdom. He has a huge kingdom. And one day, one sadhu or sage came to his palace. And this sage, and you know, Vedic culture, as a sage or the guest coming to him, they have to deal with him properly. So this Maharaj Bhartrihari, he accepted this sage. He came down from his throne. He made him sit on his throne. He washed his feet. Then he fed him. Then he fanned him. He fed him nice sumptuous prasadam. And he satisfied in all respect this sage. But very much satisfied with Maharaj Bhartrihari's hospitality, he said, "I'm very happy with your hospitality, and I want to give you one gift." So he gave him one special mango, and he said, "If you eat this mango, you will be young for the long time, almost eternal, and you will save your energy of the mind, physical energy. You will ultimately, of course, you have to die, but you will be very strong and very long time, long life you will live, and you will be very happy, and you will die ultimately very happy, and wherever you go, you want to go." So he gave it, this mango, to this king, and this king, with the shaking hands, he took this mango from the sage, and he started thinking, "What should I do with this mango?" And she started thinking, "You know, I have a very wonderful, very beautiful, very chaste wife. If I give this mango to my wife, my happiness will be complete. So he gave this mango to the, because he thought, what is the use if I will be young and strong, but my wife will after some time become old and not beautiful. So better my chaste wife should have it. So this king, he gave this mango to his wife. But the problem was that the wife had a paramour, has a boyfriend. And the boyfriend was a horseman, not horseman, those who taking care of the horses in a palace, taking care of the horse. It's actually old tradition that we know as the wife of the rich man, they go to with the chauffeur, with the driver, marry a driver of the rich man. So she had a boyfriend, and so this wife, when she was alone with this mango, she thought, "What's the use of me? If I give this this mango to my boyfriend, I will be happy. So I will be, get it, enjoy it with him for a long time." So she gave this mango to her boyfriend. And the problem was that the boyfriend had another girlfriend who was a prostitute. So she had a girlfriend. So he gave this to her girlfriend. But this prostitute, she was very chaste and very, not chaste in her own way, chaste and honest. So she thought, I'm a useless girl, I'm a useless woman, I'm a dirty woman, I'm engaged in so many bad things. Our king is the best person in our kingdom, so I have to give it to our king. So you know what happened? She bring to this mango to the king, and the king, he understood everything. He can't believe his eyes. Oh my God, how come this mango came to you? So he, after some time, he understood, because a few months ago his brother came, this king brother came and said, your wife is not chaste, she had a boyfriend who is a horse, taking care of the horse. But he was so much mad about this, he just kicked out his brother, he didn't believe him. You go out, you're a liar. And he just even thought about that, because his wife was very chaste, and at least he didn't see that he wasn't unchaste. So he kicked him out. He started thinking, oh my God, I hurt my brother. I hurt so many people, thinking that everything was okay at that time. But now, he said, I hurt. So he understood everything. He understood all this chain, this mango. So he threw this mango in anxiety, and he set fire to his palace and went to the forest. And after that, he created this famous Vairagya Shatakam, 100 verses glorifying Vairagya. So this is the Vedic culture. The Vedic culture shows us that there is no actually happiness. And the Srimad Bhagavatam, you know, all these 9 canto, we might think, why is Shukadeva Goswami telling all this story about this girl, that marriage, fifth canto about the hellish life, in order to us to prepare that actually this 9 canto prepare us that we shouldn't seek happiness in this world. And this is a Vedic culture. Vedic culture, the base of the Vedic culture is on a mode of goodness. And a mode of goodness brings us this understanding. And mode of goodness, it is said, brings us jnana and vairagya, so knowledge and detachment. Because nowadays we can see the culture there in this Western society is based on a mode of passion and ignorance, and everybody thinking, trying to create more and more the consumerist mindset. So, and we have to not just read this, but we have to show with our own example, because you know nobody came to Krishna consciousness and joined this movement just by reading philosophy. Of course, we see that some people practicing, because first of all, Vedic culture means not just philosophy but practicing in our own life, applying in our own life and show others. Unfortunately, it's far away. We are from the perfection, but at least we, our movement is still young, and we have to at least go to that goal, to this goal of life, ultimately detachment from this world. And this is this that I want to say. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna. Yeah, Ganagana Prabhu.
You made one nice comment that I remember about the children respecting and worshiping, actually, the parents. And immediately it struck me, how do the child worship the parent? You know, of course you have this idea of the touching the feet and so forth. But the way that the child can actually worship the parent is to listen to him and take his instruction. Because the parent is all about providing for the child, providing a shelter and so forth. But part of the shelter that the parent provides is the intelligence to see things in a perspective that the child doesn't have. So if the children want to worship the parents according to the Vedic culture, they should listen and follow what the parents say. Because even, you know, simple people, they have experience. They see what is right, what is wrong. And if they're trying to impart this into their children, the children should very much pay attention to that. That is the best way for them to worship the parent, is to be obedient and follow.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
In today's society, it's all about rebellion. Rebellion is glorified, you know, so much. But then the children go so far astray and they hurt themselves. So the parent doesn't want to see that. What does the parent want? He doesn't want the worship, but he wants to see the benefit of the child. So it's the same with Krishna.
Of course, I rebelled and became a devotee. So when I rebelled, I became a devotee. So that kind of worked. Yeah, but they may be picking up on a few qualities in it, you know, from our backgrounds as well. But that's a good point. I'm just teasing. I do have a child. How much do you know? But at least one that I know of. But okay, more seriously. So we have this story, you know, about the king and the mango and the queen, and then there's a whole long line of people after that. So, and then the mango comes back to the king, and everybody gets busted, and he burns down the palace, and he runs off to, you know, and he does a very nice transcendental thing. But in the meantime, he has his whole kingdom, and what is everybody in the kingdom talking about as this hits the CNN, you know, the news, you know, when they watch the news at night, and all this hits the newspapers? How does that affect you? Is there any information in that purpose?
It doesn't say about this. In Vairagya Shataka, he actually explained only first few verses about his life and the meaning of this.
I'm being a little facetious, but I mean, I think, and you brought it up, the big difference is a lot of things happen, but there's always this very transcendental punchline at the end.
Well, of course, maybe because he was very angry, he didn't think about everything else, and he said that at that time when he understood everything, the spirit of Vairagya enlightened his heart and he forgot about everything. He was so disappointed that he wanted to forget about it. Yes, Manmohan.
In the verse, it talked about how the father was giving this advice to his daughter that you degraded the whole family, you're going to go to hell. How did he have that information? You know, in other words, it was part of the Vedic culture that they could actually understand that what you do has a reaction. I mean, they believed in hell. Nowadays, it's optional. If you believe in it, it's there. If you don't believe in it, don't worry about it. You know, so it was just interesting because you were mentioning the Vedic culture, that they actually had that information. We had this information too, because of Judaism, Christianity, for the most part, that there's an idea that you could go to hell. But without that information coming, people don't know. So what type of hell he was, she was being told that she would go to? Is that like with the robbers or not?
Well, it's 26 hells explained in fifth canto. I can't remember which one. You know, I can tell you one thing that came to my mind, why it's happened. I heard one thing that the more we attached to something, if we have attachment to something, we connect it with the karma of that. If we don't have attachment, we didn't tie it with the karma of that. So the not the minus of Vedic culture, but because in Vedic culture there was too much attached to their families, and because of too much attachment to the family traditions, it means they tied it to their relatives together. And when she goes to hell, everybody else goes to hell because she pulls together with them. Because they attach, she attach, everything attach. This came to my mind about when she lost. On the ladies' side, there is no questions? Okay.
So you earlier you spoke about we'll be celebrating the 45th anniversary of Srila Prabhupada coming to America. Mm-hmm. So we can say 45 years. There's been a lot of things that Srila Prabhupada couldn't have said at that time. He may have written it in his book, but he could not have emphasized because of the culture and everything. But now we're 45 years into this culture, and so there's a lot of things we can say, you know, and especially we, you know.